This Marketplace podcast is supported by Invest Puerto Rico. What's next in innovation? That's not the right question. It's where. Puerto Rico, more than just a tropical paradise, it's innovation's paradise, where startups and global players coexist in a vast and vibrant ecosystem, where talent runs deep, highly skilled, and bilingual. Plus, the island offers the most competitive tax incentives in the U.S. If you believe your business can go anywhere, Puerto Rico is the place. Find out more at investpr.org/marketplace. Again, that address is investpr.org/marketplace.
Hey, Marketplace listeners, you know around here we like to think you're never too young to learn about the economy and financial basics. That's why we're bringing the Million Bazillion Live Tour to school to teach important lessons about budgeting, investing, saving, and more. It's all the fun of the podcast, but now live, immersive, and interactive. Special thanks to our tour partner, Greenlight, the debit card and money app for kids and teens. Learn more about Greenlight at greenlight.com/million. That is greenlight.com/million.
Happy 247th birthday, USA. How's that economy holding up? From American Public Media, this is Marketplace. In Baltimore, I'm Amy Scott, in for Kai Rizdahl. It's Tuesday, July 4th. Good to have you with us on this Independence Day. The Bureau of Labor Statistics headquarters on Massachusetts Avenue in Washington is, of course, closed for the federal holiday. But later this week, that's where the economic action will be when the data crunchers release the latest jobs report for the month of June. The economy's been adding, on average, about 340,000 jobs a month over the past year. And how strong the job market continues to be will help the Fed figure out its next move on interest rates later this month. Fed Chair Jerome Powell has signaled the possibility of raising rates at the next two meetings in his ongoing fight to vanquish stubbornly high inflation. Marketplace's Elizabeth Troval asked some economists what the Fed wants to see in the next jobs report.
When Fed policymakers set interest rates, they're looking at a whole lot of economic data.
Household survey data, you know, they still look at financial market data, you know, survey professional forecasters.
Rice University economist Zach Bethune.
They're most focused right now on labor market data. You know, we still see the labor market running very hot.
Hot indeed.
Last month, 339,000 net new jobs was probably higher than they had hoped.
Morning Consult economist John Lear.
We'd like to see that number trending lower.
From 100 to 150,000 new positions, says David Wessel with the Brookings Institution. He says the Fed also wants a slowing down of wage increases.
So they would like to see more people coming into the labor market, increase labor supply. They would like to see less demand for labor, that is, employers creating fewer jobs.
Tadevik Sekposyan with Texas A&M University says slightly higher unemployment would also signal a much-desired cooling, which she admits is an odd concept for her students.
When I teach, this is always a problem, right? I mean, you go and say, you would prefer a bit higher unemployment, and the students look at you saying, you know, what are you talking about, right?
But she says the Fed's goals are simple: price stability and full employment.
We have inflation on the higher side relative to the historical standards, you know, and above expectations. And we have unemployment on the lower side and, again, below expectations, right? So it's kind of trying to recalibrate this.
If the Fed pulls it off, ta-da!
We might get the much hoped-for soft landing where the economy slows, inflation comes down, but we don't have a recession.
Or, Wessel says, if we do have one, it would be mild. I'm Elizabeth Troval. Marketplace.
U.S. markets were closed for the holiday. We'll have a recap of the year so far when we do the numbers. In the latest season of the Marketplace podcast I host, How We Survive, We looked at the business of catastrophe modeling, that is, technology that helps insurance companies predict the risk and potential damage of natural disasters, such as wildfires or hurricanes. Karen Clark is a pioneer in CAT modeling and CEO of Karen Clark & Company. With the 2023 hurricane season underway, we checked in with Karen about what could be ahead. Welcome to the program.
Thank you, Amy.
What do we know about how climate change is affecting hurricanes?
Well, of course, there is a lot of uncertainty around climate change impacts. But at KCC, we go to the ultimate source of information, and that's really the IPCC reports, the Intergovernmental Panel on Climate Change.
Right.
And what they include in these reports are really, they analyze all the scientific research going on around the world, and they pretty much embody the scientific consensus. I think it's important for people to know that there's a lot of uncertainty, and there are dozens of different models, and they can produce radically different results. But in the IPCC reports, we have synthesized for us the consensus. And for hurricanes, there's currently scientific consensus that hurricanes are not becoming more frequent, but they're becoming more severe. And so we're seeing a shift to a higher proportion of major hurricanes, that is category 3, 4, or 5.
NOAA, the National Oceanic and Atmospheric Administration, has predicted a near normal hurricane season for 2023. First of all, what does that mean? And what are your models telling you about potential damage this season?
Well, there's considerable uncertainty around the forecast, and particularly this year, because we have two conflicting influences on hurricane activity. One is, of course, the very warm sea surface temperatures, which does lead to or should lead to a highly active season. But we also believe that we're starting the El Nino phase, which means more vertical wind shear, and this is bad for hurricanes. But in reality, these forecasts don't really matter that much to insurance companies or other types of property owners, because if you think about it, our population is not uniform along the coastline. So what causes a very large insured loss is a major hurricane striking a highly populated area, such as Miami or around Fort Myers, like we had last year with Hurricane Ian. So I think, you know, Amy, one of my favorite sayings are hurricanes are like real estate. What are the three most important things? Location, location, location.
We've seen generally insurers pulling back from risky areas. Earlier this year, State Farm and Allstate said they would stop writing new policies in California due to catastrophe risk and the high cost of rebuilding. As we've talked about, this has been happening in Florida and other coastal areas as well. Is it going to get a lot harder for people to live in these areas because of the insurance situation?
It is becoming more costly, and that's because the risk is going up. Now, insurance companies, as long as they're able to quantify the risk and are able to manage it, then they can write the insurance. But it's very important that homeowners understand that the price has to be commensurate with the risk. So as you pointed out, construction costs are going up even higher than the general rate of inflation. And that is a big factor in the homeowner's premium. Now, you mentioned Allstate and State Farm moving out of California. And these companies also moved out of Florida after Hurricane Andrew in 1992. But what happened in Florida, and we anticipate this to happen in California, is that the void, or at least part of the void, hopefully will be filled by new companies that are formed specifically to specialize in this type of risk.
But as you know, the other company that stepped in to fill the void in Florida after Hurricane Andrew was Citizens, the state-backed insurer of last resort, which in many places is now the only provider of storm coverage. Is there a risk of the state or government insurance programs
holding too much of the bag?
I guess the heart of the matter really is that there are some very risky areas, particularly in Florida, that are really difficult to insure at a price that people can afford. And in those areas, if the state still wants homeowners to be able to buy insurance at, you know, more affordable rates, then, you know, they create a company like Citizens that will be able to provide it to people. But the real issue is who's going to pay for the risk? Because if homeowners themselves are not paying for the risk, then of course the taxpayers are paying for it. And either it'll be the state taxpayers or the federal taxpayers. So the question then becomes, who will be paying for this risk and over what time period?
Yeah. And I'm sure we'll be checking back with you as this situation evolves. Karen Clark with Karen Clark & Company, thank you so much.
Oh, you're welcome, Amy. Thank you.
We are hard at work on a new season of How We Survive. No spoilers just yet, but you can catch up on seasons 1 and 2 on the platform of your choice. About 150 years ago, a formerly enslaved man named Harvey McLemore worked out a deal with the man who once enslaved him. He bought 4 plots of Tennessee land with sweat equity plus a few $100s and built a house. Eventually, he subdivided that land and used it to help other formerly enslaved people become property owners, too. The community they built was called Hard Bargain, and Harvey McLemore's house still stands today.
My name is Derek L. Solomon. I am the executive director for Hard Bargain Association. When you walk down the street to the McLemore's home, you see almost a cottage, a little small cottage. I would describe it as a small version of a White House. It was a staple of a beacon of hope for other enslaved free enslaved sharecroppers who came along, because it gave them hope that yes, you can also plant a home and actually have a life, a good quality life in this area that you once had to work forcibly. Now you can do it willingly. It is still a thriving, moderate income, middle income family neighborhood. You have a lot of retirees, and you also have 5th, 6th, sometimes even 7th generation families that have lived here and still are here. Those was the folks and the people that actually created and built the town. The Hard Bargaining Association was started and founded in 1999. To help move families, that's low to moderate income families, from at risk to stable housing, and then from stable housing to permanent housing. We've probably done about 800 rehab projects over the last several years. That allows us to bridge the gap for these local families to stay here, build local, buy local, and be here and keep them local for generations to come. I'm originally from Louisiana. My mom and dad only made $30,000 a year annually, max income, and they took care of 3 kids. But I actually made my way up here through my now wife of 16 years as of January, and had the opportunity to purchase my home through Hard Bargain Association, August 31st of 2012. I want to make sure that not only my kid, but my kids' kids is okay too. So my grandkids and my great-grands. You know, we go back to see the McLemore House because of that significance. It literally makes us think about Harvey McLemore and what he had to do to pave the way for other families, including myself. When you go by the McLemore House, you literally look at the past, present, and the future all in once of Hard Bargain.
That was Derek L. Solomon, Executive Director of the Hard Bargain Association in Franklin, Tennessee. If you've got a story of a remarkable house or one about how you found home, tell us about it at marketplace.org. Coming up.
They want you to be on this treadmill of replacing your devices every 18 months.
And what happens to the old ones? But first, let's do the numbers. U.S. markets were closed for Independence Day. Tomorrow marks the first full day of trading for the second half of the year, so let's put a bow on the period from January to June. The Dow Jones Industrial Average is up nearly 4% year-to-date. The NASDAQ is up a whopping 32% over the same period. And the S&P 500 jumped 16% higher. Now a look at how fireworks have fared over the past few years. In 2019, the pyrotechnics industry exploded about $375 million worth of fireworks at shows across the country. In 2020, that number plunged to $93 million. The fireworks show recovery started in 2021, and this year we should see record spending, according to the American Pyrotechnics Association, of $400 million. There was no pandemic dip for consumer fireworks. In fact, we spent nearly twice as much in 2020 as the year before, and this year record spending is also expected, $2.3 billion. You're listening to Marketplace.
This Marketplace podcast is supported by Ascensus, helping people dream bigger, aim higher, and save more with financial confidence. Unleash the power of your retirement savings plan with innovative technology that makes things easy, top-notch service from experts who care, and flexible solutions that can grow with you. For more than 40 years, Ascensus has been helping savers achieve their goals. We can help you achieve yours, too. Learn more at Ascensus.com. That's ASCENSUS.com.
Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage to the first real-life store stage, all the way to the did we just hit a million orders stage, Shopify is there to help you grow. Plus, Shopify's award-winning help is there to support your success every step of the way. Because businesses that grow, grow with Shopify. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/marketplace, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/marketplace now to grow your business, no matter what stage you're in. Shopify.com/marketplace.
Big news! One generous Marketplace fan, Dr. Joe Rush from Florida, is offering to match the next $50,000 in donations to Marketplace. And every single gift gets us closer to a critically important May fundraising goal. So please, give right now and double your impact thanks to this generous match. Go to marketplace.org/donate. With access to so much information, it's hard to feel like an informed, discerning citizen. That's why on Make Me Smart, which is a podcast from Marketplace, we make it easy for you to stay in the know. Hi, I'm Kai Rizdahl. Every weekday, Kimberly Adams and I unpack the latest from Washington, D.C.
The Senate Minority Leader has announced that he will step down as the Republican leader.
What's happening in AI? I mean, don't buy at the top, but holy cow, artificial intelligence and all the companies related to it are the hot new thing. And we do the numbers.
So as a refresher, inflation is the rate of increase in the prices of things. It's not just sort of things getting more expensive. It's the speed at which things get more expensive.
Because in a world that's constantly changing, we all need to stay smart. Listen to Make Me Smart wherever you get your podcasts.
This is Marketplace. I'm Amy Scott. I'm not going to throw stones from Baltimore, but New York City has a rat problem. Mayor Eric Adams has made fighting rodents a major priority, reforming trash collection practices and appointing the first ever rat czar. A few businesses have looked elsewhere for help, as you'll hear in this installment of our series, My Economy.
My name is Sheila Massey, and I am the founder and president of Hard Hat Cats. Hard Hat Cats is a nonprofit, and our mission is to take feral cats who have a very, very low chance of adoption from the city shelter, because feral cats, by definition, are not crazy about people, but they make great working cats. They kind of hide out and sleep during the day, and then when everybody goes home, they patrol at night. I've placed cats in breweries, distilleries, a luxury apartment building, we won't say where, a couple of gardens, a bodega. This is nature's solution to rodent control. I've had stories where this was kind of their last resort. This particular brewery adopted two cats, Benji and the Goon, Benji and the Goon. And they tried everything to get rid of these rats. Benji and the Goon came in, and this particular big rat that had been eating through the walls and showing up every night, and they couldn't get rid of it. I tell you, within a couple of weeks, that rat was just gone. There was no corpse. We never found a corpse, but we never saw the rat again either. I've placed about 31 cats at this point, and like I say, in very, very different types of environments. And I've even learned that the cats boost employee morale. This is like a side benefit I really hadn't anticipated. And some of them are trending on internet now. It's just unbelievable how the cats kind of have their own personalities and become more of a mascot than a mouser. How did I become a cat person? I have the same question. I was a dog person my whole life. And back 20 years ago, when somebody asked me to adopt a little kitten off the street, I said, no way. I don't even like cats. But this cat was so funny and so smart, I fell in love. And I say, this little cat, Sadie, changed my life, because I'm a cat lady now.
Me too, Sheila. Me too. That was Sheila Massey at Hard Hat Cats in Brooklyn, New York. You can tell us about your economy at marketplace.org. The right to repair movement has been gaining steam over concerns about electronic waste and the climate consequences of our throwaway society. This year, 29 states have introduced legislation aimed at making it easier and cheaper to fix broken consumer electronics, appliances, and farm equipment rather than throw them away and replace them. In the UK, a right to repair law passed a few years ago, but it excludes cell phones, tablets, and laptops, and companies are fighting efforts to change that. The BBC's Elizabeth Hodson reports.
From washing machines to computers, we all rely on electrical goods as part of modern life. But when they stop working, it's often hard to know where to turn.
The bulk of the stuff that comes in here is household goods. We've got toasters, CD players, kettles.
That's Maury McPhail, who runs a repair cafe, teaching people how to fix things for free in East Sussex in the south of England.
We have a pretty good strike rate on toasters. The difficulty with those is that manufacturers for purportedly safety reasons, put special screws and security screws onto them so that even the simplest tasks can't be performed.
And it's not just toasters. Apple products like iPhones and iPads are also notoriously difficult to fix, says Carl Wines, the founder of the repair site iFixit.
They want you to be on this treadmill of replacing your devices every 18 months. They do things like gluing the battery in. If your home button breaks, it requires a special tool that only Apple has.
He says although companies like Apple don't actively prevent repairs from being done to their products, they don't help users.
Consumers should have the right to know how to fix all of their things. I think every product that you buy should come with a repair guide.
After pressure from campaigners, Apple did launch a self-repair service for a limited number of its products in the US in 2021, which was expanded to the UK and seven other European countries last year. But companies like Apple argue they can't give away all their trade secrets.
If we give essentially a free-for-all to repair anything that you own by anybody to any standard, they're essentially going to devalue the IP that the companies own in their products when it comes to patented parts.
That's Jani Halainen, a lawyer at London firm RPC, which often represents manufacturers. He says firms need to have a return on their investment.
The patent's point is to give you value on the innovation that you might have spent millions, if not billions of dollars on.
Globally, we throw away around 50 million tons of electronic waste every year, according to the United Nations. That's like throwing away 1,000 laptops every second. Most of it ends up dumped in low-income countries. My colleague Ed Butler has visited the world's biggest e-waste site, Agobogbloshie in Ghana.
That's the side of the old casing of a computer here. And there's the front of it. I mean, there's a big pile. It's taller than I am in front of me, of old computer casings, 2 or 3 meters tall. Everything here has a value and everything can be eviscerated, pulled out, burnt to pull out the metals.
Governments are starting to recognise the problem. In Europe and the UK, manufacturers of some white goods now have to make spare parts available. Last year, New York State passed similar legislation for electronic items. But Ugo Valori from the Restart Project, which organises repair cafes around the world, like the one we heard from earlier, thinks more needs to be done.
The biggest barrier of them all, which is the affordability of repair, continues to be ignored by any piece of legislation anywhere. And this is a huge concern.
Right to repair campaigners say they'll continue the fight to get everyone the right to fix the products they own at a price they can afford. And the BBC's Elizabeth Hodson for Marketplace.
This final note on the way out, the newest competitor to take on Twitter is an old rival, Meta. Owner of Facebook and Instagram is launching a new service called Threads. The text-based conversation app will go live on Thursday and arrives as Twitter continues to turn off longtime users and advertisers, most recently by limiting the number of tweets one can view in a day. Twitter's controversial new owner, Elon Musk, announced that change Saturday. Meanwhile, Twitter founder Jack Dorsey's new offering, Blue Sky, reported record traffic. All right, here's your moment of economic context. The average price of a gallon of gas on this big driving holiday is $3.53 a gallon, says AAA, which makes a 4th of July promotion by the convenience store chain Sheetz in the Northeast look pretty cheap. For today only, while supplies last, a gallon is going for $1.776. Get it? $17.76? Our digital and on-demand team includes Carrie Barber, Dylan Mietinen, Janet Wynn, Olga Oxman, Ellen Rolfes, Virginia K. Smith, and Tony Wagner. Francesca Levy is the executive director of digital and on-demand. I'm Amy Scott. We will see you tomorrow. This is APM.
Hey everyone, it's Rima Khreis, host of This Is Uncomfortable. If you're looking for some good recommendations on books to read, well, you should join This Is Uncomfortable's Summer Book Club. Every other week in our newsletter, we'll share a new book that'll make you rethink your relationship to money, class, and work, while also featuring an interview with the author or an expert on the topic. Plus, when you join, you'll be entered in a giveaway where you could win some This Is Uncomfortable merch. Be sure to check it out. Sign up today at marketplace.org/bookclub.